Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today, we continue our series, Midday in the Neighborhood. Nearly 3 months have passed since Jack Young replaced former Mayor Catherine Pugh, who resigned amid scandal. With a new mayor and a relatively new police chief, the city continues to address its high homicide rate and other challenges. And through it all, our neighborhoods remain full of people who are willing to organize, mobilize, and fight on behalf of their communities. Every few weeks here on Midday, we are checking in with folks from all 278 of Baltimore's neighborhoods. Today, my guests are Lauren Kelly Washington of Greenmount West near Penn Station, Ben Marks of Ridgely's Delight near Camden Yards, and Michael Woolen of Canton on the waterfront in East Baltimore. Midday in the Neighborhood starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Hope you had a good weekend. Thanks for joining us. Today, it's another edition of Midday in the Neighborhood, a series in which we've set out to spotlight the remarkable tapestry of communities that make up our city. According to the group Live Baltimore, there are 278 unique neighborhoods in Baltimore, and our aim in the months to come is to sit down with people who are actively involved in each and every one of them, to learn about where they live and to hear about the issues that concern them. Today, I'm joined by representatives of three Baltimore communities, Greenmount West, located just north and east of Penn Station near the city's geographic center, Ridgely's Delight, which is that historic little wedge downtown between Camden Yards, the University of Maryland Medical Center, and Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and Canton, the large waterfront community just east of Fells Point and south of Patterson Park. Lauren Kelly Washington is the president of the Greenmount West Community Association. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Ben Marks is president of the Ridgely's Delight Association. Ben, good to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Michael Woolen is a member of the Canton Community Association and the founder of Canton Canopy, a neighborhood tree planting program. Michael, good to see you as well.
Thanks so much.
And listeners, we invite you to join our conversation. If you live in Greenmount West, Ridgely's Delight, or Canton, we'd love to hear from you. If you live anywhere else, we'd love to hear from you as well. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. We are streaming as well on the WYPR Facebook page, so you can ping us there as well. So, Lauren, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about Greenmount West.
So Greenmount West is definitely a neighborhood that's experiencing a revitalization, I would say a renaissance. And it is a neighborhood that attracts, or it has in the most recent years been attracting D.C. commuters, a lot of Hopkins employees, and of course, who started it in terms of their, of course, the legacy residents and the artists that have been there.
And it's D.C. commuters because you're very close to the train station.
Yeah, it was the reason why that my husband and I moved there. He's actually took the train this morning into D.C.
Mm-hmm. So it's easy to get to Penn Station.
It's a two-minute walk, and we'll talk a bit about Penn Station and that development that is coming up very soon.
And it's also closely aligned with the Station North Arts and Entertainment District.
Yes, so let me explain. So Station North is basically a catchment of three neighborhoods, Greenmount West, Charles North, and a part of Barclay, not all of it. So those are the three neighborhoods that make it up.
Yeah, and Charles North is that little area literally on Charles Street.
On Charles Street.
North of the station.
Of the station,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And Ben Marks over in Ridgely's Delight, tell us about that. It's a fun, funky little neighborhood, but it's teeny, isn't it? It's like a little sliver, isn't it?
It's a little sliver, and, you know, the joke around our neighborhood is that you need breadcrumbs to get in and out of the neighborhood because of all the one-way streets, but we are bounded to our east by Russell Street and Camden Yards, and to our west by Martin Luther King Boulevard, to the north by the University of Maryland. We have about 500 homes or so, about 1,200 residents. About 60% or so are students at the University of Maryland Professional Schools, or they are work in the immediate vicinity. The other 40% are homeowners. And people love our neighborhood for its close proximity to the Orioles and Ravens games, as well as the excellent commute via MARC train to Washington, D.C., and the easy access to the highways as well.
Yeah, so another community that, you know, again, a lot of folks who are working in Washington, happy to live there, can they just bop on the MARC and get down there pretty quickly. And then, Michael Willen, you are in particular are involved in this effort to plant trees in Canton. Tell us about that work.
Yeah, so about 2.5-3 years ago, me and a group of friends got together and we said, you know what, Southeast has the lowest tree canopy in the entire state. We're right around 4% tree canopy. That includes Highland Town and O'Donnell Heights and stuff like that. But Canton in particular has almost no trees. Some streets around the square closer to Boston Street does have some foliage. But we all sort of band together and we said, you know, we'd really like to go after this tree planting initiative. And we met with some folks up Midtown Belvedere who had done this effort a few years back. And they sort of gave us the recipe to work with. So we went out and we wrote a couple grants, and we were lucky enough to get grants the past 2.5 years. And so far, we planted about 200, 250 trees in the neighborhood, and we plan on continuing that in the fall.
And the tree canopy is important for what reason?
Well, I mean, you can look at all the statistics and stuff like that, the valuation of trees. They say that a tree approximately has about $50,000, $53,000 worth of value every year, whether that's reducing your climate, HVAC costs in your home, reducing crime, reducing runoff. That's kind of the main capture point for us and how we write our grants, is that we're within the critical area of the Chesapeake Bay. So they want to reduce the runoff as much as possible so that it's not actually reaching the bay. Hopefully that'll achieve maybe a swimmable harbor sometime soon and really increase the recreational value of the harbor.
Yeah, because if there's a tree there as opposed to asphalt, the rain is absorbed in a much different way.
Yep, absolutely. It'll just run right off, run right into the storm drain and go out to the water. Of course, there's a lot of issues that people bring up with trees that we are trying to correct perceptions that have been sort of developed over the years, whether that's poor planting practices or just a perception that trees are somewhat unclean or unkempt. Or just the total lack of effort to take care of the trees is something that we're trying to, a hump that we're trying to overcome.
So people, are there actually some people who are opposed to trees?
Unfortunately,
that's
yes.
Like, that strikes me as weird.
Laughing,
I mean,
right?
How can you hate a tree?
You know, it takes all kinds, right,
to
get through this world. So I don't have any malice towards anyone who sort of has their perceptions already made up. But I will chit-chat with them and see if I can sort of bring them over to the dark side. either agree to let us plant a tree
or at least the shady side.
Yeah, or the shady side. And whether that's engaging them to be stewards on their block to take care of their trees or coming out and volunteering with us during a planting or a mulching event. You know, we'll take anything we can get kind of thing. Right?
And there are places to plant the trees. I mean, it's not, were these places that trees once existed and you're replacing them or how's that work?
There are existing tree pits. Typically they're too small. So even if we're going to go plant in a small tree pit, we're going to want to cut some more concrete out.
Right.
The standard now is about 4 foot by 8 foot for a tree pit. You'll see people who don't like the concrete being raised up and this and that. Typically that stems from the trees being in too small of a pit, and they've gotten too large for the existing pit, and they start to tear up the infrastructure, right? And that's an issue that people raise all the time. We do 4 foot by 8 foot pits. There's also a lot of stumps in the neighborhood as well that we're working on getting ground. But the majority of our pits are fresh, new-cut pits on streets that you wouldn't even recognize them, you know, following the completion of our projects.
We've done a bunch of shows about the tree canopy and how important it is.
Oh, yeah.
Cools
yes.
the city down,
totally.
You know, helps with the carbon emissions. I mean, just, and it's an efficient way to do it. That's great. Let's go to the phones to Dale Hargrave. He's on the phone from Greenmount West. Dale has called before. We're always happy to hear from him. Dale, welcome.
Hey, Tom, how you doing? And how's everybody on your panel?
We're doing great.
Hi, Dale. It's Lauren.
Doing good.
Good to hear your voice.
So I just called to say that to give hope and glad tidings to all the other communities that are struggling out there in Baltimore. As you know, Greenmount West, we're in the middle of the city, and we had a lot of vacant housing and all kinds of stuff going on in our neighborhood. We probably have 3% vacancy now. And Ms. Lauren can tell you she chose our neighborhood about 8 or 9 years ago. Before our house that she lives in was even ready.
Right.
And so we've been very successful in the board. When I was on the board and the board that we had, we were very far thinking. A lot of the stuff y'all talking about as far as the tree canopy and greening and stuff like that, we've been there and we've done that. And I think we're probably one of the best kept secrets in Baltimore City as far as some of the things that we've done that have changed our community, and we really believe it can be replicated throughout the city. But we've got to have a plan, and people got to be willing to compromise and not try to wait to get 100% of what they want. Take it in small bites, and you'll accomplish your goals.
Yeah, well, Dale, you have been a longtime advocate for Greenmount West and a great advocate for our city, so we all very much appreciate it. So, Lauren, yeah. I mean, as you take a look at the landscape of Greenmount West, what strikes you as the biggest challenges that, you know, still remain to be overcome?
Oh, so the biggest challenges, of course, with the infill and all of the new development coming is to find a delicate balance between having that success and having home values go up, and then also not displacing. Also, people, I think what we're grappling with, especially through issues in our development committee, is we're talking about where is the balance, too, of density? In general, I have an opinion of that. I moved to a city because I want to live in a place that's dense. I employ all Baltimore folks to start thinking more about how transportation is the way. A lot of times when you have something that comes up for zoning and there's a parking variance, I wish we were actually talking more so about how to push for great transportation. But as in any neighborhood association, it's always, like I said, striking a balance. No one is going to be completely satisfied. But I do want to say, just to circle back to Dale, he has been a part of laying the foundation of many of the initiatives that we're doing. I actually just came today from loosening up the soil in Treewell, speaking of. So part of that is, like, the new homeowners are coming in, and there's some new renters that are coming in as well who want to be engaged. You also do have on the other side of that people who you're constantly trying to get engaged. And it's coming. It's coming. But that's definitely a challenge. Personally, for me, it's a volunteer organization. And I'm a mom, and I'm an artist of sorts. And my family does come first, I will say that. And but sometimes I find myself working 40 hours a week and not paid.
Yeah.
And I think people sometimes don't realize that, you know, they're, oh, she has all the time in the world. And after this, I've got like a list of 10 things to do today, seriously.
Yeah. And I think probably every neighborhood mm-hmm. has three people like you guys.
Yes.
You know, who are
absolutely.
Willing to do that extra thing, go that extra mile, and put in that extra time for the community. And speaking of Dale's, you know, notion of incrementalism, mm-hmm. you know, a little here, a little there. I mean, I think if each neighborhood incrementally figures out ways of improving, then of course ultimately the city improves as a whole. So Ben Marks in Ridgely's Delight, speaking of density, that's an issue for you all, not just for the folks who live there, but for the folks who are pouring in there during Orioles games and Ravens games and other things downtown.
Well, probably more so on the day-to-day work week. We get a lot of people who come to work at the University of Maryland or visit the University of Maryland who park in our neighborhood. Sometimes that creates a little bit of a traffic or parking problem for long-term residents who, you know, for lack of a better reason, want to be able to park right in front of their house. And unfortunately, I don't think there's any city in the country where people have the luxury of being able to park directly in front of their houses. Sometimes they have to park a block away or half a block away. Striking that balance between parking and density, and also growing as a community to be able to provide things that are the amenities of community engagement, like beautification, like having trees or tree pits that are ready to be repurposed for flowers or shrubs, having an active community, one that gets out and does social things together. Whether it's
you just had an event Friday night.
We did. We did a movie night, and we went a little different. A lot of communities go for the fun and entertainment side. We went documentary, and the movie night was Wasted, the Story of Food Waste. We're very thankful for the gracious contributions of the South Baltimore Gateway Partnership and the Baltimore Rec and Parks through the Rhythm and Reels. But we showed a movie all about food waste and the life cycle of food, and you could have laid the solutions in that movie right on top of Baltimore and said a lot of these things coming out of the movie are things we can do in Baltimore. What I went for as a prelude was not just lawn games, but we had people come out from the city agencies and speakers talking about the intersection of education and health and food access, where community schools are going to become the new hubs for communities in Baltimore, not just for education, but for, you know, perhaps as a food pantry, perhaps making sure that the kids have healthy meals to eat for breakfast and lunch, or a backpack full of good produce to go home with on the weekends. Maybe this is moving in the direction of, what do we do in terms of gardening? Can we give kids new access to opportunities that they didn't have at a level of after-school programming that they might not have had in Southwest Baltimore? So those are the kind of things that we're trying to bring to the community.
Ben Marks is president of the Ridgely's Delight Association. Michael Woolen is a member of the Canton Community Association and the founder of Canton Canopy, a neighborhood tree planting program. Lauren Kelly Washington is president of the Greenmount West Community Association. Quick break, and when we return, more conversation about Greenmount West, Canton, and Ridgely's Delight on Midday in the Neighborhood. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at Midday WYPR. You can follow me on Twitter at Tom Hall WYPR. You can also ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's Midday on Education. The school year has just ended for local public schools, and as the school year began, we convened a panel of Baltimore City Public School teachers to hear about their aspirations for the year. And at that time, we promised to bring them back when the academic year was over to see how things went. So they will join us tomorrow. Karen Ginyard is a third grade teacher at the Mount Washington School. Tavon McGee teaches middle school math at City Springs Elementary Middle School. And Bobby Marinelli heads the math department at Poly High School. So these folks who are on the front lines of education, and we will hear their perspectives tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, it's another edition of Midday in the Neighborhood, our series of conversations with people who are active in various Baltimore neighborhoods. If you are involved in leadership of your neighborhood, we'd love to hear from you and have you on the show. Send us an email with your contact information to midday@wypr.org, and one of our producers will be in touch. My guests today here in Studio A are Michael Woolen. He's the founder of Canton Canopy, a tree planting program in Canton. Lauren Kelly Washington is the president of the Greenmount West Community Association. And Ben Marks, he's the president of the Ridgely's Delight Association. If we're talking about your neighborhood today and you've got something you want to add, or if you want to share a perspective from another part of the city, please feel free to join us. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Again, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our conversation. So, Michael Woolen, in terms of Canton and transportation, we talk about parking and the challenges that folks in Ridgely's Delight have. Canton is not immune to parking issues.
No, not at all.
There was a big to-do about a bike lane there and egress for fire trucks and stuff like that. How do you personally, you know, sort of summarize or assess the tension, if you will, between folks who just like to see a whole lot fewer cars on the road in general and folks who want to drive and park in front of their house, as Ben was saying?
You know, obviously Canton has the luxury of being very close to 95. So you do have a lot of people who live in the neighborhood who drive out every day, whether they're going down to Northrop Grumman or they're even going down to D.C. or up the road. You know, people kind of have their cars. They live in the city because they want the experience, but they want easy access to the highway. So we're sort of dealing with that issue, number one. There used to be, prior to my time on the Community Association, a transportation and parking committee. And they went and they did diagonal parking on a lot of the two-way streets. They made them one-way, stuff like that. Basically, they got to the point where they couldn't find any more parking. So they actually dropped parking off the committee name. So it's just the Transportation Committee now, who worked very closely on the Red Line development way back when.
And a lot of people opposed the Red Line development way back when, too, right? I mean, if
it wasn't a perfect project. I mean, I'm a big, you know, proponent of having some more mass transportation in the neighborhood. Would I have put it along Boston Street in a perfect world? Probably not, because you're reducing sort of that radius of people who can actually use it. There's no houses to the south of Boston Street besides the few that are along the shoreline. So if you could have put it farther north, and Canton could have used it in Hollandtown and some of the neighborhoods farther north, I think it would probably been more effective. I think there were some stipulations in why they aligned it in a certain way. But personally, I'd like to see something resurrected there. Whether that's a reincarnation of the Red Line or maybe even some bus rapid transit or something like that, I'm not quite sure. I know right now we sort of have a bus proponent at the state level with MTA and stuff, so we're going to sort of have to work with them, I believe, on that.
I was talking to Ryan Dorsey the other day, city councilman who does not represent Canton. Zeke Cohen does. But Ryan told me that he and his wife were in Tokyo. They were visiting, just, you know, having a vacation. There is no street parking in Tokyo. The city of Tokyo, which is, I don't know how many millions of people, it's
talk
huge.
Talk about density.
You know, but talk about density. That's
it's
a fascinating thing. I wasn't aware of that. I've never
this is what I mean about the mindset. And as a matter of fact, it's so funny. We do have a parking committee. It's a subcommittee of our development committee.
Okay.
And we're getting to that, possibly looking at the angled parking and all of this. But there's also the Mark Riders group. I'd like to tie those two together, sort of like to talk about transportation and parking at the same time so that there's a balance. But anyway, it's just, I mean, but density in terms of Tokyo, you were just saying. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just, you know, it's interesting that you do have folks in Canton and just everybody concentrating on these very, you know, narrow issues.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're not just glossing over them, and I think that's all to the good. I'm really delighted to hear that you have basically a gentrification committee.
It is, and as a matter of fact, the development committee was started as to have an advocacy for anti-displacement, and another subcommittee of the development committee is the Legacy Resident Committee. And what we've done this year in particular is we've worked to identify hubs. Candidates, that's housing upgrades to benefit seniors. And that particular committee has literally, we beat the pavement to find people. We work closely with Jubilee Baltimore and the Central Baltimore Partnership, who I really need to credit for our neighborhood coming up. You can't mention Greenmount West without them as a partner, and Strong City. But anyway, having these initiatives, especially this year, our focus within the development committee was having us search for people who can get grants for aging in place in their homes, people who've been in the neighborhood for 30 plus years. Their homes are
so these are federal grants?
These, no.
Generally,
these are
state grants?
Some of them are state, some of them are city. Yeah,
and these grants are designed to make it possible for the homes to be equipped and outfitted in a way that older people can stay there.
So part of it would be aging in place, and part of it is like anything as extreme as like a new roof, a new water heater. So there's, over time, when things deteriorate, there's some conditions in homes. You go into them, you go, wow, I can't believe people have been living like this.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is the issue of trust. When you establish this, hi, I'm going to come into your home and help you out. And, you know, there might be some hoarding issues, or there might just be some conditions that people just kind of like, I don't feel very comfortable with you knowing this about me. But we're working through that. And it's a huge initiative that this has been a focus for us this year.
Mm-hmm. And Ben Marks, you're down there by the University of Maryland Medical System, the bioethic stuff, or the biopark stuff. Talk about, is there a tension between renters and owners in Ridgely's Delight? I mean, you have a number of people involved in graduate schools or fellowships or whatever in the professional schools at University of Maryland. Is there a happy medium, an aspiration that your neighborhood has for numbers of renters versus owners, and does it matter?
Well, it definitely does matter, but I don't really sense that there's the tension between multi-generational, you know, community of ours. Seniors are working alongside people in their 20s and 30s, young professionals fresh out of school, to do gardening and beautification efforts on a block-by-block basis. It's really amazing. You know, one of the things that when I came on board as president in the past year was to try and unify the community. We had some leaders who we had lost right around the end of last year. They were great unifiers. They were great for throwing social events and getting everyone, you know, feeling good about being neighbors and working together. And my goal in their passing was to kind of continue on with their mission of community engagement. So beautification took a strong suit for getting people involved. We've got young people gardening with older people, gardening with kids, and a whole host of projects that anyone can get involved in, whether you're a new neighbor or an old neighbor.
Ben Marks lives in Ridgely's Delight. Lauren Kelly Washington lives in Greenmount West. And Michael Woolen lives in Canton. It's Midday in the Neighborhood. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And you can ping us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's go to the phones to Laurel in Armistead Gardens. Laurel, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. Our community is unique because it's a corporation and everybody has a share. But since I moved here about 30 years ago, it's so apathetic, and there are problems with management and actually upkeep of the community, but it seems like nobody wants to get involved. So I was hoping your guest just from Ridgeleaf Delight just spoke about community unification. I was just looking for suggestions of what could be done.
All right, anybody want to take that? Ben, you want to say, how do you bring people together?
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting is about 20, 25 years ago, the neighborhood did a user needs survey. They went door to door and asked people what were the biggest problems and challenges they faced. And not surprisingly, parking and safety, security, and trash were the issues then.
And they didn't mention Orioles pitching.
They didn't mention Orioles pitching.
Just wonder.
But since then, you know, we have similar hot-button issues now, but we found a different way to handle it. So it's not just at the survey level, and we will be doing a survey again later this year for the first time in roughly 20 years. It's about finding those touch points for engagement, whether it's people who like to bicycle, whether it's people who like to garden, whether it's people who have dogs and they love, you know, the fact that we have a very dog-friendly neighborhood, whether it's people who are very civic-minded oriented and they want to be better connected to the 7 neighborhoods to the west of us in the Southwest Partnership, or whether it's people who have a big, you know, they want to have a stake in what the future development on Pratt Street is going to be. There are a number of different touch points. And I would say, you know, survey your neighborhood, find anywhere from, you know, 3 or 4 people who feel like yourself and, you know, form your board according to possible, you know, best practices that are available through the mayor's office for nonprofits, forming a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Do that and then, you know, start working on the issues that are most important. Closest to the pin, you know, the idea we say is what's important now? You know, the win list, what's on your win list? And mm-hmm. the what's important now list is those things that are most easily achievable by 1 or 2 people that can make a big difference in the lives of others. And from there, let's see if we can
work
build something passing around
there.
So
right.
can I speak to that?
Sure.
There's an initiative that we've started just this year called Stoop Nights. And it started off of just, well, actually, Stoop Stories. I'm gonna say I stole that idea from here.
Yeah.
But we don't have stories.
It's Laura Wexler and Jessica Hankin who have been doing that now for years.
Right. Yeah. So I had this idea of people just coming out on the stoop. And this happened after an incident in the neighborhood and, you know, to bring more eyes on the street. My whole thing, going back to Dale Hargrave, it's incremental. Just sometimes even just getting people out, knowing who their neighbors are. I don't know if the neighbors don't know each other, but just sometimes just simply just kind of having a hangout night. So sandwich boards announcing that and an actual stoop night. And through those, the stoop nights have really engaged everybody. We start generating ideas, and there's your informal survey just by having people informally get together because it's really comfortable.
Just knowing somebody, you know, somebody you walk by all the time, you know, you walk in the dog, you see this person
exactly.
for months and you don't know their name.
Right, you know the dog's name.
You know the dog's name, exactly. And Michael Willen, there's a piece just in the Sun today about how the white population of Baltimore is swelling with millennials.
Right. Yep.
Right, so this 25 to 34-year-old demographic has increased exponentially, and Canton is one of the places where a lot of those folks wind up. More than a quarter of white residents now fall into that category, and in 2000, 16% of white people in Baltimore were millennials. So there are some, obviously, some white flight and some black middle-class flight that is happening all over the city, but younger white folks are moving in. How's that affect Canton?
Well, I think, you know, we have no problem attracting white 25 to 34-year-olds, right? But the real issue is retaining those people after age 34, right? Once you've perhaps found your spouse, maybe you've bought a house, maybe you had a child, maybe you have two children, right? And you're kind of faced with that decision. So what do we do now, right? We're in the best interest of our children. Where do we send them to school? Where are they going to grow up? You know, you're sort of setting those permanent roots down that you might be there for 18 years, right? I think Canton, you know, they're really trying to crest that hill in becoming like a very well-rounded neighborhood. We were lucky enough, we had a developer, they wanted to come in, they wanted to do townhomes on a lot on the east side of the neighborhood, and we sort of discussed with that developer, and they ended up putting a Goddard school in that location. So that's further retaining residents who possibly need childcare in the neighborhood. The other big deal is Hampstead Hill Academy. So they were ranked in the first...
Which is a very popular school.
They were ranked in the first Maryland State school star ranking as a 5-star school, which is like a big deal for the neighborhood. I believe it's a zoned school for the residents that live around there, but they also take people from outside the community. So I believe there's a 200-person waiting list for that school right now. And they're currently trying with the city to acquire the old middle school, which is just down the street, and basically have a 2-campus scheme.
Which would allow them to expand.
I think they want to sort of taper it in. You know, they don't want to just take on 600 students, because I think it's the students, it's the parent base, it's the teacher base that really helps that school succeed. Mm-hmm. And certainly the management there has really shown they can. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. You know,
and Lauren, in your neighborhood, we've got the Baltimore Design School. There's a Montessori school.
And just as I just found out, I want to say just last week, Baltimore Montessori School has got the approval from the school board to expand their early childhood program. So that's, I believe, on the minds of people when they enter Baltimore. Another thing in terms of the earlier part of education is I think Baltimore actually does a poor job of letting people know about high school choice. That's where I am in my phase. I'm raising a 14-year-old boy. And we actually moved to Baltimore, believe it or not, because of the educational opportunities. So I'm not sure how many people actually say that. I homeschooled him for a bit. He's a violinist. Our fingers were crossed that he'd get into the Baltimore School for the Arts. He did. We're saving $10,000 a year. So, and putting that money towards college, hopefully. But I think that there's the front end and the back end of education. We don't talk enough about the opportunities of that you have a choice for education in high school. And there's also other...
The so-called citywide schools.
Citywide schools, yes.
Polytechnic,
school choice.
City college.
Yes, all that.
Western high school for girls, yeah.
So, and the list goes on. We were just so focused on BSA. And Bard. Don't forget Bard Early College High School.
Mm-hmm,
amazing
mm-hmm.
place.
Over
so,
on the west side.
Yeah, we don't toot our own horn about what is actually here for young people. We talk a lot about, oh gosh, young people are in trouble. But there's also opportunity here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a city with actual cultural things that are going on. And I know retention, and I do like to speak to, I'm always asking my people who are, I'm African American, and I'm like, well, black middle class, where are you? All my homeschooling people, they live in Owings Mills.
Right.
But they would come in here for educational opportunities, to Open Works, to go to the harbor for the Science Center. Everything that they did was in the city, and I'm always challenging them, why aren't they moving here?
Yeah. And so, in Ridgely's delight, Ben, I mean, you've got University of Maryland very involved in the neighborhood, the surrounding neighborhoods of their large footprint, and the neighborhood itself is also, you know, partnering with them?
To some extent, yes. I mean, one of the things that's interesting, and I just wanted to address the prior question about retention, we recognize as a community that, you know, in order to retain parents, and we had a recent, you know, loss of probably 7 or 8 families from our community who moved to other neighborhoods or moved out of the city completely. And we recognize that it's incumbent upon Ridgely's Delight or any neighborhood to have a connection to a community school. You know, the four pillars of a healthy community are education, their health, their economics, and workforce development. And all of that ties together in the economy. All that ties together with making sure that, you know, we've got a healthy, safe set of streets for people to commute to and from school, and that we are committed to helping our community schools. In this case, our closest one is George Washington Elementary. We're going to work with them to help them on their redevelopment of a PTA, and we want to be there as that feeder community for kids to go to that school, because parents will stay in the city if they perceive that there's a strong community school attached to the neighborhood where they live. So that's one of the chief components is, you know, we forget about each individual neighborhood has amenities, has features that it can market to the rest of the city.
And it's important for older residents who may not have, you know, skin in the game in terms of a kid in a public school to know that it's important for them and their property values and their peace of mind and their, you know, health and safety to have a really good, strong school, even if you don't have a child in it, if you're past that point in your life.
Well, even more than that, though, I have neighbors who are like former artists, and they still dabble in art a little bit, and they would love to be mentors for some of the after-school programs at the University of Maryland Community Engagement Center. Mm. That is, you know, one of the ways that we do work. Sometimes it's just as simple as facilitating a connection between a group like Art with a Heart, who has opportunities in programming.
Yeah, bring folks together.
Bring folks together.
Get it going. Yeah.
And get to work.
Well, on the other side of MLK, you guys will be getting one of like the first new Catholic schools in the city in decades, correct?
From what I understand, sure.
Yeah.
And where's that going to go up?
It's on the west side of MLK, mm-hmm. just north of the biopark.
Uh-huh.
Actually,
north.
There's a
okay.
there's
yeah.
green space set aside there, and they have to maintain some of the green space for fields.
Okay.
But the majority of the lot will be actually, I believe it's the first African-American saint from Catholic Church.
I
is going to be the name
Mary Lang.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I believe,
great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lauren Kelly Washington is the president of the Greenmount West Community Association. Ben Marks is president of Ridgely's Delight Association. And Michael Woolen is a member of the Canton Community Association, and he founded Canton Canopy, a tree planting program. Midday in the Neighborhood continues after a quick break. When we come back, we hope you'll join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. You can tweet me at @TomHallWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Before we go to that break, on Mondays here on our program, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far this year, 149 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. This past week, Baltimore police reported 4 people were victims of homicide. Only one of those victims has been identified. His name is DeAndre Crawford. He was 28 years old. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, it's Midday in the Neighborhood. It's an occasional series that we do about once a month or so, spotlighting Baltimore's neighborhoods. There are, count them, 278 unique and vibrant neighborhoods in our city. And from time to time, here on the program, we're going to be sitting down with folks who are active in each one of those communities. We'd like to hear about where you live. If you are involved in your neighborhood, maybe as a leader in your community association or as an organizer of community initiatives and events, let us know. Please email your contact information to midday@wypr.org, and one of our producers will be in touch. My guests today are Lauren Kelly Washington from Greenmount West, Ben Marks of Ridgely's Delight, and Michael Woolen of Canton. We invite you to join us at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWYPR, and to join us on Facebook, to ping us there, go to the WYPR Facebook page. Ben Marks, over in Poe Homes, which is adjacent to your or very close to your neighborhood over in Ridgely's Delight, this outrageous situation where the folks there were without water for, you know, 5, almost 6 days. They finally got it figured out. They had a couple of, initiatives to fix it that didn't work, and it took them quite a long time to just get something as basic as running water over there. What do you know about that situation, and what's your take on that?
Well, I think it's terrible that it happened. I know that, you know, Poe Homes was a housing project that was built a while ago as to be transitional housing. It certainly outlasted its functional usefulness for habitability for a lot of people who live there. And I think that, you know, this happens in a lot of municipal cities is, you know, neighbors, people who haven't had the best of political representation or the best voice are, you know, have lost out on these opportunities to be heard. And so in some cases, what happened at Poe Homes is just, you know, a symptom of the aging infrastructure that's been affecting all of Baltimore. But Baltimore's response to it has to be one of, you know, let's fix this as quickly as possible. And let's, you know, right now Poe Homes has the, you know, perhaps the opportunity with some help from city leaders and state leaders to be part of a great revitalization plan on the west side. Yesterday, you know, I try and do a daily walk. Sometimes it's only every couple of days through the neighborhood just to see what's happening on every block, every one of the 15 blocks in my neighborhood. And there's a gentleman at the corner who was like doing some cleanup work, and he wasn't from our neighborhood. He was actually there from Poe Homes. And I said, man, what are you doing here helping to clean up, you know, our corner? He says, well, you know, this is the gateway of Baltimore City. When people come off of 395 and MLK, he says, I want it to look nice for people who come into the city first thing. And that's always been one of the driving forces for me as well, is we've got a role to play at Ridgely's Delight, being right there at the corner on the entranceway to the city. We cover three major blocks, you know, and we have University of Maryland as a common neighbor with our neighbors to the west. But here was a guy from Poe Homes. They'd just been through hell for the past week without water, yet he's in my neighborhood helping me clean up. And so
yeah,
together,
God bless him. That's
his
great.
Name is, I just wanted to give him a shout out. I told him I would. His name is Terod Arrington. Guy couldn't have been nicer. My newest friend in Baltimore City is Terod Arrington from Poe Homes, because this guy and I, we just worked together for 5 minutes just to clean up a corner. And it's a shame that the city wasn't able to get to it sooner, but this is what we as neighborhoods do, is we pull together and we bootstrap. And we do things with our own resources, because we know that if the city can't quite get to it in as quick a time as we would like, yes, we just do it ourselves and
That's
we
right.
move on.
Yeah,
That's
well,
right.
Mr. Arrington, thank you for helping out. And Michael Willen, in terms of the crime and grime focus that Mayor Young, for example, has committed priorities. In terms of Canton, Lauren mentioned, you know, folks that she knows from the suburbs from Baltimore County, reluctant to come downtown or reluctant to live downtown unless they're coming in for a particular thing. And there's this meme that you hear floating about that, you know, folks are reluctant to come into Baltimore City because the squeegee kids drive them nuts, or they're concerned about crime in the Inner Harbor, or they're concerned about that. On the ground in Canton, how do people feel about those narratives?
Well, I mean, obviously, crime is always an issue with everybody, right? And it can never be low enough, despite what's going on in other neighborhoods in the city. My neighborhood is sort of the epicenter of the issues, right? And we kind of have to dispel that in a lot of ways. And we're very lucky to have sort of what we have. We have a lot of natural barriers, obviously, with the water and then Patterson Park and then sort of Fells Point to the west. So we don't have a lot of sort of, I say, like transient sort of population rolling through Canton. Unless they're going to work in like Harbor East, Harbor Point. So I think in a lot of ways we'd really need to appreciate sort of what we have in Canton, and also recognize that as we, you know, reach out to the other neighborhoods there, whether that's north of the park, Patterson Park, McKeldry Park, stuff like that, we can sort of bring more traffic, more ground game, and sort of reduce the loitering and stuff. I think all the restaurants and the bars and the activities in Canton really increases the foot traffic, which really dispels any sort of crime from happening in the first place. So I think what Canton and every resident along the water can do is really go farther north into those neighborhoods, support their activities, and sort of drive traffic going forward.
Brian pings us on Facebook, where is our casino money? Neighborhoods were supposed to see a cut. And he also wants to send a shout out to Tracy Hall for the photo of Canton on the WIPR webpage. And we do have information about how to submit photos of your neighborhoods that we'll post on the WIPR Midday webpage to showcase some of these neighborhoods. Thomas tweets as well, can more be said about how neighborhood surveys have been done to ensure engagement of the most people? And again, Lauren, you talk about having activities where just folks just literally get out of their house and come out and hang with each other.
Yeah.
Do you formalize it afterwards? Or
oh, yeah. We have actually conducted surveys. I'm just saying in terms of actually beginning, because the caller sounded like she was at a very preliminary state. I'm not even sure if they do have a community association. I didn't hear that. But yes, as a community association, we have done surveys on Nextdoor. We have also done printed surveys because we've got some folks who do not have access to a computer. And we're a mixed-income neighborhood. There's lots of that we have to consider how we can communicate with folks and meet them where they are. So there's been, I mean, I know with the development committee just recently, we ran a beautiful survey. We had a MICA student do a survey on what people actually wanted to see at a particular site that was going to be developed. It's been delayed a bit, but things like that, you can, if you get people, if you get at least two people who have some skills behind them that can actually produce a survey. It's very possible.
And maintaining that income diversity is a really great thing. Not every neighborhood is successful with that. It either just like, you know, goes all the way over and becomes super gentrified, and all of a sudden you've got these incredibly expensive houses that are, you know, squeezing other people out. What's the general racial mix in Greenmount West these days?
I would say that the general racial mix is probably 60% African American and 40% white and or other. And this is just a guess off the
top. That's unscientific. Right. Yeah.
Sorry.
But I understand. Yeah.
So it's still predominantly African American. There is a 189 scattered home sites through Arlington Housing Corporation that it's mainly voucher housing. And I believe they have a lease with City Housing through like the next 10 years or so. So that's part of it. And then there's also affordable housing. I'm going to say lowercase a affordable, meaning not federal, that some developers are talking about putting in. We've got at the Bell Foundry micro apartments that are coming in.
And that's the thing. The developers can figure out how to make lower cost housing still be profitable for them.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have to be selling $4 million condos to make money. You know? And in Ridgely's Delight Bend, I mean, it's a, I have the impression it's a largely white neighborhood, but you're surrounded by, you know, a number of historically black neighborhoods. What's the narrative about Ridgely's Delight and people's sense of the responsiveness of the city to, again, what Mayor Young has identified as his two big priorities, crime and grime?
Well, you know, actually, we're kind of a diverse neighborhood. We have, you know, students, we have people of color, we have old people, young people, professionals, people who've lived there their whole lives. So, you know, our neighborhood was founded out of the Dollar Homes program that started in '73. There are still some original neighbors who, they are some of my best neighbors, best volunteers, or some of my neighbors who've been there from the very beginning. They were original board members. They've got stories to tell. I love it that you're doing the Stoop stories, because we thought of the Stoop Stories concept, and again, playing off what you guys do here with some of the short-form vignettes and the on-the-block segments that you do on YPR, getting people to talk and be great storytellers and just commiserate and hang out is a great thing. So I think that, you know, that's where we're getting a little bit more of our multi-generational, you know, connection point between the old and the young. It's funny, because one of the things that we thought about this past weekend with Foodstock was we had some of our best neighbors, our older neighbors at the event. And, you know, it's this whole idea of like representational duty. If you're a part of the neighborhood, if you've always been a doer, you're still going to be a doer and a do-gooder. And, you know, it's trying to instill in our board, especially in some of our younger board members, that, you know, being a board member isn't just a 2 hour a month concept. Sometimes it's a few more hours than that. Not everyone has to do 40 hours a month. That is a little extreme on probably my part. But even so, you know, there's a happy medium that's probably closer. And so we're always in that little kind of context. But, you know, I think our neighborhood gets along pretty well on the things that we get along on. And, you know, occasionally there will be concerns, conflicts, whether it's a parking issue or is the developer going to build to scale. But at the end of the day, we're still neighbors for the reasons that matter the most, is that, you know, we love each other. We want our neighborhood.
And we like
to
living there.
We like living there. It's a great location.
And Canton, Michael, is one of the largest neighborhoods in Baltimore. I mean, it's pretty enormous.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you got pretty big boundaries too when you talk about the water.
It's yeah.
But in terms of getting consensus about how things should be, I give you the last word. I give you 20 seconds to answer that. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of Canton has sort of absorbed some of the surrounding neighborhoods as well. You know, my mother's grandparents lived on Fleet and Robinson, and back then it was Highland Town there, and now that's substantially Canton, right? So the boundaries have kind of pushed as the development's pushed, and somebody could say, well, my house is in Canton kind of thing, when it was really in Highland Town. So they have sort of grown in a lot of ways, and Fells Prospect as well on the west side. They can kind of, you know, claim their own.
All right. Well, I am very grateful to all of you for coming and for the work that you're doing on behalf of each of your communities. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for doing this segment.
Thanks, Tom.
Michael Woolen is a member of the Canton Community Association, the founder of Canton Canopy. Ben Marks heads the Ridgely's Delight Association, and Lauren Kelly Washington is the president of the Greenmount West Community Association. If you are involved in your neighborhood and you'd like to be part of our Midday in the Neighborhood series, send us an email to midday@wypr.org, and one of our producers will be in touch to have you come on the the show. We want to thank the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner. They serve breakfast on the weekends. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, midday on education, we're going to talk to three teachers who are on the front lines. They are in the classroom. Imagine that, talking to people who are in the classroom about education. Karen Ginyard, Tavon McGee, and Bobby Marinelli will join us tomorrow. We want to thank our interns, Rob Velasquez and Margot Kohler. We want to thank you for tuning in today. And we encourage you to stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's coming up right after the NPR News at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.